I think modern plastic surgery is helping someone accomplish goals or beautify themselves or make small improvements when they're already beautiful and look great. And it's a little more of a gilding the lily sort of thing. Hey, if this is going to help you feel a little more confident, I'm happy to help you with this.
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host. And in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? So when I was younger, I was pretty hardcore against any kind of medical cosmetic procedures. I rolled my eyes at the idea of Botox, and I had a really strong knee-jerk reaction to surgical procedures like tummy tucks or liposuction. I guess this is one of those places where age has helped me develop a more nuanced perspective. Yes, there are things about my body and face that I will never be 100% in love with, and I know it's not possible or desirable to try to fix all of those things. Learning to embrace our imperfections, which just start to seem more evident as we age, is a part of learning to be a fully realized and emotionally and spiritually healthy human, right? On the other hand, I recognize that there are a lot of things most of us invest time, money, and effort into in order to improve our physical appearance. From orthodontia to fashion or fitness programs or skin serums, there are a lot of non-medical things most of us try at some point just to feel better about the way we look. And most of those non-surgical things also come at a cost, whether it's financial or just time. As I've moved into my mid-40s, I've had to grapple with the fact that some of the changes I don't love that came with my very first pregnancy are, at least without intervention, here to stay, and other aging-related changes are starting to make themselves visible as well. So while it may be controversial, I've become much more open to the idea that medical procedures can be just another step on that same path toward matching up the way you feel with the way you look, and can maybe be used in a healthy and even body positive way. No matter what you might be considering, whether it's a skin treatment or a surgery, knowledge is power, and really understanding what to look for in a practitioner or what to expect from a procedure is so important. That's why I'm really excited to bring on today's guest, Dr. Terry Zomerle. Dr. Z, as she goes by, is a board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon at the Center for Plastic Surgery in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is pretty close to where I live. In addition to being an accomplished and respected surgeon, Dr. Z has a fascinating story. She started medical school relatively late after having her kids, and so was, in her words, a non-traditional student. In our conversation, Dr. Z really digs into what we should all think about if we're considering having a cosmetic procedure, some of the procedures she performs most often on women in their 40s and 50s, and what you can do to help keep yourself safe and maybe help make it more likely you'll be happy with your results. We also spend a little time talking about how surgical procedures and body positivity can coexist. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Dr. Zomerle, but first let's talk about this season's sponsor, Vionic Footwear. I was just on Vionic's website and I am so excited about some of the newer styles they've come out with for fall and winter. One of those is the waterproof Jackson boot, which is a lace-up hiker style with lug soles. And then the Spencer boot takes that hiker style and literally elevates it with a 2.75-inch stacked heel. Either one would look so cute with jeans or even a dress and tights for that 90s grunge look that's back. And of course, like all of Vionic's shoes and boots, they are sure to be ridiculously comfortable with stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside. So there's no risk. Go to vionicshoes.com to check out those styles and be sure to let me know which ones you like best. You can also use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's vionicshoes.com and use the promo code MORE, M-O-R, for free shipping. Okay, now let's get into my conversation with Dr. Zomerle.
Hi, Dr. Z. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, hey, Megan. Thanks for hosting. That's great. I'm happy to talk with you today.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Well, before we dive into the interview, just tell me a little bit about your family and then tell me about the work you do.
Sure. So I'm married to my husband, Peter. He's an emergency room physician, which has been a challenging job in the our recent times here. I have two daughters. Greta is my oldest. She will be 15 next week, which I can't believe. She's finishing her driver's training this weekend, and she's excited to have that done. And then I have a 9-year-old named Sigrid, and we can't forget my two great Danes.
Oh my gosh.
Wilhelmina and Henrietta. They outweigh my daughters by far, so we always include them in the family too.
I love that. Do your daughters try to walk them? I had a great Dane when I was in high school, and I remember when I finally was big enough to walk the dog.
Thankfully, they're pretty docile, so the name takes a lot of responsibility for them, which is nice. Yeah.
I love that. Well, tell us about the work that you do.
So I'm a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. I practice in the west side of Michigan here, not too far from Lake Michigan, which is, I'm biased, but the most beautiful lake on earth. And I'm really lucky to practice in this area. I'm a partner in a private practice, but I also work through the hospital as well, taking call. And I teach, I'm a clinical faculty at Michigan State University. So I teach residents, new doctors who are learning to become plastic and reconstructive surgeons also.
Oh, okay. So, you know, I also live right by Lake Michigan. So I share your bias. I'm just like an hour and a half, I think, south of you. So in St. Joe. On your Instagram, you refer to yourself as a non-traditional student. What do you mean by that?
That's correct. I guess I call it a midlife crisis in my 30s. And in retrospect, maybe I should have just bought a car. I don't know. I had a midlife crisis and I went to medical school. So I was by far the oldest person in my class. And my fellow students referred to me as the class mom. And I had children, you know, I'm my oldest when I started as a medical student. So trying to balance motherhood with the rigors of medical school was definitely pretty intense.
Wow.
And I've stuck with it. And med school is 4 years. And then my surgical training was 6 years. So it's taken a whole decade of my life. And here I am, I'll be 45 this year, and I'm just kind of getting started in my quote-unquote real job. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I love that because, you know, I think so many people think, well, I'm already in my 30s, it's too late, or I'm already in my 40s, it's too late. But either way, you're still 10 years are going to go by whether you do the thing or not, right?
That's exactly correct. And that is exactly what my husband said to me. He's like, 10 years is going to go by regardless. You might as well be doing what you love.
Yeah. Before you went to medical school, what did you do?
I was a physician assistant and I worked for a general surgeon. So I did 4 years of undergrad here in Grand Rapids. And then I took a year off afterwards to take the MCAT for medical school. And I also worked as a nursing assistant at one of the hospitals here, just kind of biding my time because I wasn't really sure what direction I was going. I knew I wanted to do something in medicine. Hmm. And during that year off, I applied into a master's program at Grand Valley, which is a university here in West Michigan, and got accepted to their master's degree program to become a physician assistant. So that was a 3-year program. I got my master's degree, and then I found a wonderful general surgeon who worked in the Muskegon, Grand Haven area. So I lived out that part of town for a period of time, and I worked for about 6 or 7 years as a general surgery PA, saw patients in the office, was a first assist in the operating room, and the surgeon I worked with, it was just wonderful. And he treated me like a peer and it was really special. Mm. And he was looking at retirement and I thought, gosh, I don't feel like I want to work for anybody else. And we had some life events. My oldest daughter was born kind of in this time period and she was born with congenital heart disease and had open heart surgery when she was a day old. And we spent a lot of time in the hospital and the ICUs and you get to do a lot of thinking, I guess, during that time period. And I thought, gosh, life is really short. And I've always wanted to practice as a physician. And at that time, I was reading in the newspaper that Michigan State was thinking of moving their medical school to the Grand Rapids area, which was where I lived and where my husband practiced medicine. So things just sort of came together in that way. And I had been denied from Michigan State University about 10 years prior when I applied. So I had to retake the MCAT, which is the entrance exam. So I've been 10 years since I'd taken an organic chemistry class. So it was kind of painful studying for this test, but
wow,
I did it. And the only medical school I applied to is Michigan State. And I thought, if I get in, I get in. And this was meant to be. And if I don't, I don't. And
wow,
they accepted me through their early decision program, which was awesome. And the rest is history, I guess, as they say.
Yeah. Okay. So you went through medical school while having small children and your residency and all. So you really you kind of went in all in on the sleeplessness and the hard stuff all at once. And I would imagine things are kind of calming down on both fronts at this point. Does your life look almost like unrecognizable from 5 or 7 years ago?
Somewhat, but there's something to when your kids are super small, their memory's a little bit shorter where yeah. they don't realize you're gone quite as much. Where daughters going through teen years are just, I'm finding, you know, just need you more and need you around yeah. more. You have to be a little more reliable for them. So
I definitely agree with that. I have a 12-year-old daughter, my youngest. I have other teenage boys, but the girls, it's a different thing, sure.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of a different season of life, I guess.
Yeah. When did you know that plastic and reconstructive surgery was the field that you wanted to be in specifically?
Probably when I started medical school. I got to see some plastic and reconstructive surgery when I was a general surgeon. And I'm not trying to oversimplify general surgery, but you end up taking things out and making a lot of holes. And plastic surgeons would come fill the holes when we were done, you know, whether it's a breast reconstruction for cancer or, right. or removing a tumor. And I was like, this is really awesome. You get to like make stuff. And I just right. thought that was so cool. You get to like make people, help people look like people, which yeah. is just special. So I started medical school thinking that was a field I was interested in. It also is very heavy on anatomy. And, you know, it's the only specialty where I've operated on a 1-day-old. I've operated on a 97-year-old. You operate wow. on the scalp, on the toes, on the, you know, every body part. So there's no other specialties kind of own an age range or bones or lungs or, you know, different body parts. And we really are the only specialty that does it all, so to speak. So wow. it's really kind of, it's the best specialty in my opinion.
I love it. And I think for myself, I'm not exactly sure of the difference between plastic and reconstructive surgery. And then of course, what is now referred to as cosmetic surgery. Can you kind of give us like the, I don't know, kind of the definition of what those three different things are?
Sure. So, and I always want to start with this when I talk to someone about plastic surgery, because of Tupperware or Barbie yeah. or whatever, plastic to us means fake. Like that's what right. people equate plastic to is fake. And plastic surgery is based off the Greek word plastikos, which means to shape or mold. And that's what oh. we're doing as plastic surgeons is we're shaping and molding tissues. And you know, plastic and reconstructive surgery is a very large umbrella, and there's, you know, a lot of different surgical techniques that we're trained in as plastic and reconstructive surgeries, and cosmetic surgery certainly falls under our umbrella, but it's really a small part of what we're trained to do. You know, we are craniofacial surgeons. If you have premature fusion of the sutures of your skull, we reshape skulls of babies. We do cleft lip and palate work. We make your jawbone bigger and smaller. And then we do all sorts of cancer reconstructions with free tissue transfer, which is microsurgery or super microsurgery sometimes too. So we're kind of like the right hand for the orthopedic surgeons, the neurosurgeons, when they're putting scalps or skulls back together. So, you know, we kind of have our hands in all of it. And cosmetic surgery, again, because you're forming tissue and putting things back together, requires like a really good knowledge of anatomy and understanding tissues and how they react, and just kind of that understanding. And we used to have exclusive ownership of that, and everyone seems to want to kind of nibble away at our specialty and take cosmetic surgery under their specialty, which plastic surgeons aren't a fan of necessarily, because we end up fixing a lot of errors made by non-plastic surgeons sometimes. But
so wait, do you mean that there are other physician specialties that are doing certain like cosmetic procedures?
Sure, sometimes.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good thing to keep in mind, because I know a lot of women in the age range, and this, you know, this podcast is really aimed at women in their late 30s through early 50s, I would say, just kind of coming into that 40-ish decade and on either side of that. And I do think a lot of us start thinking about, I know for myself, like things that I wouldn't have thought about in my 30s, because I was just too busy, really, honestly, raising my kids and thinking, well, maybe I'll, you know, the baby weight will go away and I'll get back in shape. And now I'm like, okay, I think it's been 12 years. So I think this is what this is what I'm left with. And now what, like, what do I want to do about this? And if you certainly don't want to have to do that twice, or like go, you know, or have something done that actually you feel worse about when it's done. So I could see how that could be really confusing.
And there's medical tourism too, is another thing that is kind of the get to my cross, so to speak.
Is going to Costa Rica or something, getting a tummy tuck? Yeah.
Correct. Okay. Yep. And that never ends well. Spoiler alert.
Why am I not surprised? I imagine that it, especially in this age group, you're probably seeing a lot of breast reconstruction after, after cancer and things like that. And what kinds of gamut are you seeing of procedures that maybe would be, you know, not something like from trauma, like a car accident or something like that, but this kind of more run-of-the-mill things that women in this age range are either looking for because they want them or because they really need them?
Sure. Some of the women in this age range have undergone weight loss surgery. So a part of my practice is dedicated to skin surgeries or skin removal surgeries after weight loss. And that includes a paniculectomy or an abdominoplasty, which is like a tummy tuck, as well as breast reductions or mastopexies, which is a breast lift. So I also do arm lifts, thigh lifts. I mean, you name the body part that has extra skin, we can cut away the extra skin. So right. There's a portion of my practice that's dedicated to that. Also, I do a fair amount of, I call them mommy restoration surgeries, because I don't know, makeovers. It's like, I'm not making you into someone you're not. I'm putting you back how you were before. That's how I, the angle I take. So I do a fair amount of liposuction with abdominoplasties, because the muscles really get lax following pregnancies. You know, you have to accommodate this growing thing and the muscles are like, I give up. So get kind of lax. And so tightening that as part of our abdominoplasty procedure. And then breast lifts, breast reductions. I do see some women in their 40s, 50s, and they're uncomfortable with their breasts, saying, I've had large breasts since high school. I was teased. It was terrible. It was horrible. I can't take the back pain, the neck pain. Those are by far my happiest patients, are my breast reduction patients, because it's literally you're taking like a weight off their shoulders or neck, because they have this weight that's just weighing them down and they have trouble with posture. And most of my women who are maybe middle aged that have that surgery are just so upset with themselves that they waited so long to have it.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask you, like, what is the one that you feel best about when you're done? Or you just know that it's going to make the patient happy, or like they're just going to feel ecstatic about it? And I could totally see why it is the cosmetic, but it's also, you're right, that back pain and just like nothing fits and you have to get bras at specialty shops. And I can see that for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. When you're talking about some of these all over procedures, so you're doing the mommy restoration, so you've got several things happening at once. Mm-hmm. I know that some of those procedures separately have gotten kind of a bad rap over the years. And I wonder, have they gotten better, or was some of that skewed, or maybe some of this like medical tourism causing some of those results?
Sure. Do you have a specific procedure in mind?
I'm thinking of liposuction in particular. I just remember there being some media about that, over the years, and saying it was traumatic and very invasive and like didn't give people the results they wanted. So I'm just curious about that.
Right. I think you have to be very judicious with liposuction, and you have to pick your patient correctly. So if someone already has excess skin, but excess fat too, if I suck the fat out, now you just have more skin than you started with that hangs. Right. And that's not a good look. No one likes that. So, and what happens again, sometimes, like you said, this is medical tourism, or maybe quote unquote cosmetic surgeons who aren't plastic surgeons. So they don't know how to do a tummy tuck, but they know how to buy a liposuction machine. So even though they were trained in another specialty, you know, if you have fat, they will suck it, and it doesn't turn out very well either. So you just have to be smart about it. And, there's been problems with organ perforations, and, you know, that happens rarely. And a board certified plastic surgeon, I think that would happen extremely rarely too. But I think picking the right patient, being conservative, it's a finesse procedure too. And I remember in training when I was a little more inexperienced with liposuction, thinking, well, how hard is this? You stick the thing in and you suck the fat out, like easy peasy. But there's a lot more, like I said, finesse or contouring to it. Where do you want the shadows? Where do you want the highlights? Where do you want the curves? How do you blend it? You know, and you can't take a whole bunch of fat out of one area when they have a fat in other areas. It has to blend. It has to look like that belongs to them. And there's some of that now, and it tends to be a little bit more in location extremes, like California or Florida, maybe, where the Brazilian butt lifts are this, where we're making body parts not look like you were born with them. And
right.
That's not my look or my gig. I understand other plastic surgeons are into it, but I'm not your girl if that's what you're looking for.
Suddenly your butt looks like there's like two balloons like right under your tailbone. It's like, wait, how did that happen? Yeah. I think facial procedures also get kind of a bad rap. And I'm sure a lot of that is because it does seem like people get a little hooked on them, or maybe you're getting them done injudiciously. So, you know, the famous like had too many fillers look, or face got so lifted, you don't have any expressions look anymore. But I'll say, like, I have been looking at my eyes lately thinking, oh my gosh, it looks just like my dad's when his eyelids started falling into his eyeballs and he could barely see anymore. Like, and I never noticed that 5 years ago, and suddenly there it is in front of me. So I can see how something really subtle could make a big difference and doesn't have to be like so crazy.
Correct. And I think subtlety is key. I do neurotoxin and hyaluronic acid fillers and some other filler procedures too. And I'm, again, very judicious with its use. I think they have a place, but usually I make a pie chart for my patients and I divide it into threes. And I said, you know, if we're going to age gracefully, quote unquote, we need to do something from the skincare triangle here. And we need to do something from like the non-invasive triangle here. And you'll likely need at some point a little something from the surgery triangle. And I think kind of using all those together is what gets the better, more natural results. And people are a little more savvy these days. It used to be you'd use Dove soap and slather yourself in baby oil and show up at 70 and be like, here, I'm here for my facelift. And people are a lot smarter now. I mean, especially... Yeah. I think with the Instagram and TikTok and this, I see women in their 20s, 30s who are like, oh yeah, I'm already using a vitamin C. I'm using a retin A. I'm getting like the tiniest bit of Botox just to keep everything soft, not to look weird and unnatural, and just kind of, you know, keeping up with things. And that's my favorite patient, who's someone who's like, I just want to do these tiny little things as I go along and not show up at 70 for the Kenny Rogers facelift. So
I love that. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about this idea of body positivity that is such a buzz phrase right now. And I know that like there are people who would say you can't, they don't go together. Like the two can't go together. And then I'm sure there's people like you who would say actually these things can coexist, and body positivity and cosmetic or plastic surgery can absolutely go together. So when we get back, let's talk about that.
Hey everyone, I just want to pop in really quick to remind you that you can still listen to season one of the Mother of Reinvention show. If you're just finding this podcast now, you're definitely going to want to check out our amazing lineup of guests from the first season. I talked to such cool women like Dagmara Kokonis, who went for her first hike at 40 and then wound up starting an adventure travel company for women. Angeline Bully, who didn't start writing until her 40s and is now the author of Firekeeper's Daughter, which has been blowing up the best-selling charts since last spring. And travel writer and TV personality Heather Greenwood Davis, who took her then young sons on a year-long around-the-world trip 10 years ago, but these days is doing a lot more solo travel. Just scroll down in your podcast app to find last season's interviews, or you can head to motherofreinventionshow.com to find them there. Okay, back to the interview.
Okay, Dr. Z, I want to kind of just dig in on this idea of body positivity. If someone was to say to you that having procedures done to make yourself look better and this idea of loving your body the way it is or your face the way it is can't go together, what would you say?
I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think like all things in life, there are extremes on either end. And I think there's a gray area where both of these ideas overlap, and that's where I choose to live, because I absolutely appreciate, you know, all body types, all skin types. You know, everyone has kind of their own look. And I think plastic surgery got a bad rep because back in the day, we'd try to make, I can't speak for all plastic surgeons back in the day, right, but in general, there was kind of a look that you'd give everybody. And especially in regards to rhinoplasties, everyone would get a Caucasian nose, whether Caucasian was your ethnicity or not. So, I think modern plastic surgery is helping someone accomplish goals or beautify themselves or make small improvements when they're already beautiful and look great. And it's a little more of a gilding the lily sort of thing, where it's like, hey, if this is going to help you feel a little more confident, I'm happy to help you with this. And we don't want to change how you, there's a lot of your ownness or your personality that's in your face and your facial structure and even in your body. So we make improvements, but we don't want to out with the old in with the new, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes we forget that we're all doing minor cosmetic things to ourselves all the time. Like we use white strips on our teeth or we get them straightened or, we're using moisturizers to keep wrinkles at bay. So the idea that like we're not all doing that already anyway is a little, it's an oversight in my opinion.
Right. It's a little tunnel vision.
Right. Exactly. We mentioned some facial procedures, but we didn't really get into the ones that you find that women in this age range are looking for the most and the ones that they see the best results from.
Mm-hmm. So everyone should be, not everyone, but women over the age of 30-ish, I think, benefit from a little bit of neurotoxin. And Botox is the name brand. It's like facial tissue and Kleenex. Right. But there's multiple brands of neurotoxin. And they work by interrupting the message from the nerve to the muscle, so the muscle isn't quite as active. And we've all seen someone who's been treated with neurotoxin by someone with a heavy hand, and they have this kind of frigid, no expression, kind of bizarro look, which I am not a fan of, and I can see people at the grocery store with this a mile away. And more modern neurotoxin treatment aims to soften the muscles, where I think a smile where the smile reaches your eyes and you have a little bit of, crinkle in your eyes looks genuine and authentic. And if you get rid of that in its entirety, it comes across as this insincerity. And especially where we can only express ourselves in some situations with the upper third of our face because we're wearing a face mask for safety.
Right.
I think it's even more important to be able to, raise your eyebrow or give your kids a stern look if you need to.
That's very important. Very important.
Right. I mean, I can control a lot with my eyebrows. So at my house with different looks. So I think just softening the muscles or weakening them, so we're not making super deep creases and just kind of keeping things soft and blended, is really important. Hyaluronic acid filler, which is like a Restylane product or Voluma. Again, there's different brand names of stuff, but hyaluronic acid is a natural substance to our body. It's manufactured in order to have this filler type material. It comes in different viscosities and we can use it in different parts of the face. And we know as we age, we lose bony mineralization of the facial skeleton. So you lose the support of your skin. The skin's exposed to sun and gravity, unfortunately, and that you get some laxity with your skin with that as well. And you mentioned people who have overfilled faces, and I hate that. And that happens, I think, if you're seeing someone for your injections who only has that tool in their shed. If you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
So if that's the only thing they can treat your excess skin with, then that's what they're going to do. And so they're going to overfill your face to make this laxity go away, where maybe you're better served with a facelift and, a conservative facelift or a neck lift or Kybella, which is kind of a fat shrinking injection underneath the chin, or liposuction. Or And that's the beauty, I guess, of going to a plastic surgeon, is we can assess, what treatment are you going to be best served by? It's not like one size fits all. You really have to, understand the patient, their goals. You have to understand the anatomy and what's happening with different decades of aging and how to adjust for this in a natural way.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about day spas and medi spas and places like that are now kind of specializing in one or two things. Like maybe they do fillers or maybe they do Botox, or they've got cool sculpting, or they've got kind of this little handful of procedures. And I've often wondered, well, what if you go in and do that and like it didn't work the way you wanted it to? Then what do? Do you just go back and get it done again? And it sounds like what you're saying is if you do go with a board certified plastic surgeon, then you have a much bigger toolkit at your disposal.
That's correct. Much bigger toolkit and a safer toolkit too, because when things go great with injectables, they're great. But when things go bad, they can go really bad. You could have a vascular occlusion, meaning if you're not clear with the anatomy, even if you are clear with the anatomy, sometimes people have different courses of their facial vessels and you could accidentally cannulate that with a filler. And if you inject the filler into there, you could get a spot on your skin, on your face, that is not getting appropriate blood supply, and that can die or slough, or horrible things can happen.
Yeah.
So it's nice, you know, we have an emergency toolkit here, and you know, if you're seeking treatments from other facilities, you should absolutely talk to them, say, hey, what happens if I get an vascular occlusion? Is probably the scariest thing. What happens? And they should have hyaluronidase, which reverses the filler. They should have aspirin, nitropaase. They should have a connection with a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, which is usually in a little bit bigger cities. They should have a connection with a retinal or ocular specialist. If for some reason this migrates and it occludes your ophthalmic artery, which could affect your vision. I mean, these things are all very, very rare, but I mean, you really need to be prepared for the worst in order to give your best, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that when you are talking to a patient for the very first time and like screening them, so much of that conversation must be around what they think they're going to get out of it, or like whether their expectations are in line with reality. I imagine there must be some of, not you talking them out of it, but there must be people who walk in the door thinking they want X, Y, and Z, and then they don't ever get it, partly because they're just not a good candidate for it for a lot of different reasons.
100%. You're so accurate with that. I mean, patient selection is everything. So you, number one, have to diagnose the problem. Right. And sometimes people, because of advertising, think, well, I want this. And when I look at the issue they're demonstrating to me, I'm like, this thing you want will not fix this thing you have. So we got to match your problem with the treatment appropriately. So, and again, if you only have one machine or one thing or one injectable, well, that's kind of the one size fits all / nobody. And that's what you get. So it's nice to go somewhere that has some options that can properly stratify your issue into the right treatment.
Yeah. Do you ever have a situation where, you know, someone comes in and thinks like, I don't know, they really think they've got their mindset on, and you kind of already said this, but like they really think what they want is a tummy tuck, but actually you're able to say, well, actually this other thing would work. Or maybe they didn't think they wanted the whole kit and caboodle, but when you explain to them how it all works together, then they see the bigger picture. And I ask this question because I think sometimes those of us who are a little surgery nervous think, well, I just want the smallest thing. Like I want the tiniest thing I can have done to get me the best results. But if you're not going to get the result from that small thing, maybe doing a few things together is actually over time, the less invasive course.
Correct. And a lot of patients come in asking for a mini tummy tuck, and I think every plastic surgeon will tell you mini tummy tuck means mini results. So it's for a very small subset of patients. And I probably see 2 patients a year at most that are good candidates for this to address all the issues that they want addressed. And, you know, part of that is kind of an advertising thing again on social media or this. Sometimes people call things a mini whatever, and I'll look and I'll be like, oh yeah, no, that was a full on standard tummy tuck.
Right.
They just somehow named it so that it sounds better. And the same with facelifts or mini facelifts. And yeah. I know a lot of people's mini facelift is really a full facelift, but people's feelings are hurt thinking, I needed a full facelift.
Right.
Where you feel a bit better about yourself. You're like, I just needed the mini.
Right. Or maybe they're just afraid. Like I think for me, when I heard there was a mini tummy tuck, I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe that would just be less scary. I don't know why. It just sounds smaller and like more delicate, but you're right. Then you're not probably going to get the result that you were really looking for. Unless you're one of those candidates, the 2 a year.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, you know, you mentioned some of the things that can go wrong if you are in the wrong clinic or the wrong practice, or maybe just someplace that's like a, you know, strip mall or something, and not necessarily getting the attention to detail or that arsenal of tools and experience that you really need at your disposal. So what questions would you recommend someone who's thinking about seeking, maybe getting some kind of cosmetic surgery or different treatments? What questions should they be asking? What should they be looking for before they even set up that intake appointment?
Sure. So I think looking for, you know, board certified plastic surgeons or dermatologists, there's, you know, you mentioned kind of the strip mall clinic, but there's some wonderful nurse practitioner or physician assistant injectors out there that do really an excellent job and are very well trained. And I think whenever I talk to my patients, I'm like, my number one goal for you is to give you a safe procedure. My number two goal is a safe procedure. My number three goal is a safe procedure. And my number four goal is for us to have a result that you and I are thrilled about. But I never put that ahead of safety, safety, safety. And so whenever you're seeking out treatment from anyone in regards to your body, I think evaluating the safety component, like, are they safe? Do they have things in order in that regard? Are they well trained? And you can ask about training and, you know, and have they gone to courses? Were they trained by someone? How long have they been doing this procedure? If they don't have a physician on site, who is their supervising physician? And are they in the appropriate procedure? You don't necessarily want a neurologist who's overseeing the injectable clinic if that's not something right. that they're trained in order to handle complications. So I think those are important procedures. And the thing that bothers me every once in a while is price shopping for injectables and things like that. And I'm as thrifty as they come. Believe me, I am so thrifty. but it's your face. I'm like, this is your face. I'm like, you don't go get the Groupon.
Right.
You know, yeah. Who knows where?
Yeah.
In general, those aren't usually, you know, highly professional place. Not always, but I'm not trying to bash Groupon. But just saying.
Well, I like Groupon if I want to go to a restaurant or, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Right.
But yes, but I see what you're saying. Like, that's not the major, that probably shouldn't be the first thing you're looking for.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and another thing I'm wondering, at what point, you know, when you're looking around and talking with physicians and things like that, are you asking about things like recovery and like whether, you know, I'm assuming at that first appointment, you're finding out whether they're medically able to tolerate whatever it is you're doing, like that, you know, the candidate shopping, I think you said, or I can't remember what you said exactly, but figuring right. out whether they're a good candidate, that all that's happening like at that first sort of consultation appointment?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And my consultations I run in, it's like a three-part series I describe. And the first part is understanding what brought them into my office. And along with that, reviewing their complete medical history, medical problems, surgeries they've had, history of bleeding or blood clotting disorders, any anesthesia problems, allergies, medications they're taking, are any of those immunosuppressants, or any of those blood thinners. Mm-hmm. Also understanding, are you a smoker? Do you use nicotine? Do you use alcohol? Do you have a caregiver, someone who's going to help, be able to help you? What do you do for work? Are you able to be off of work to give yourself the appropriate amount of recovery time? So all of that's part of phase one of the three-part series. Phase two is obtaining medical-grade photographs, which are in a professional photo area with a background. All identifying things are removed, such as jewelry. And we're taking photos from the side and the front because they're very objective. Photos are objective. And sometimes people need to see their own photos to understand what I'm talking about. I know sometimes when I look at myself and then I look at myself in a mirror, I'm like, oh, that looks different.
Right. That's me. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then we do a physical exam as well. And I like to conduct my exams of patients in front of a mirror so that they're looking over my shoulder in the mirror so that we're doing the exam together so that they're like an active participant. So they understand what I'm seeing and feeling, and we kind of do this exam together. And then I let the patients get dressed because it's nice to talk to people when you have your clothes on. And then
right.
we talk about, based on the exam and what we talked about during my exam, what I think they're good candidate for. And we review what that surgery is like. We look at some of my before and afters, again, to set realistic expectations about what it does and doesn't do. And we talk about the recovery and always about potential risks and complications. And I harp on potential risks and complications because I can do everything perfectly. The patient can take care of themselves perfectly and the body can have other ideas. And so it's not super uncommon for there to be a little hiccup, either a wound, you know, incision's taking a little bit longer to heal, or there's some more bruising than we thought, or this piece of skin isn't look healthy, and, you know, little hiccups or speed bumps along the healing. And we have to have the patient needs to have the energy and willingness to, you know, stick with me so that we can get them on the other side to healed. So.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Z, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for giving us just a kind of a peek behind the curtain of what your life and your work looks like. And I'm sure, I know for me, you answered a whole bunch of questions that have been rolling around in my head that I didn't know who to ask about what these different procedures are like. And I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate that too. So thank you so much.
course. Awesome. Nice talking to you, Megan.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.